You are going to be the best mom.
I'm an amazing mother.
You are the best mom in the whole world.
Lady, you are the best mom ever.
Welcome to The Mom Show, MyTalk 107.1's new show featuring guests and topics that all good moms will want to hear. The phone lines are open for your questions.
Am I doing this right?
651-641-1071 or email the show at mytalk1071.com, keyword mom.
You're listening to The Mom Show here on MyTalk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and today I am joined by Dr. Sonia Benson and Dr. Gretchen Lewis Snyder from Confident Kids and Couples Counseling. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, we have an exciting show for you. Hopefully, every week when you're listening to The Mom Show, you know that you can get great content and information that will help you in your parenting life. If you want to listen to our shows on demand, you can always do that. Go to mytalk1071.com, put in keyword mom, and you'll be able to get our online programming and our on-demand content anytime that you'd like. You'll also be able to get links and resources from the show. And while you're thinking about it and while you're sitting in front of a computer, go to Facebook. The Mom Show has a page on Facebook. So if you go to Facebook and put in the search bar, The Mom Show, you'll see a link and you can like the page. You'll always know when the episodes are running, who's coming in to our studio as guests, and you can get valuable resources. So today we are talking to Dr. Sonia and Dr. Gretchen, and I'd like to the audience to learn a little bit about you guys today, because you have a great topic we're going to be talking about, especially getting ready for kids going back to school. We're going to be talking about kids and anxiety today. But first, I want to know a little bit about you. Tell me about yourselves.
Well, this is Dr. Gretchen, and my background is actually in school psychology, and so I've worked a lot in schools, and I've worked in private practice since 2009, actually. Time is going by fast.
Indeed.
And so, then Sonia and I have worked together quite a bit, just professionally collaborating, and have really gotten to know each other well over the last several years and are excited about Confident Kids and Couples Counseling.
And I'm Dr. Sonia, and I'm a psychologist that specializes in marriage and family therapy, and I do a whole lot of parenting coaching in addition to working with couples and families. And I have been working actually for 20 years. I know that dates me quite a bit. My first private practice was in 2003. And then I moved from Arizona to Minnesota. So just in private practice here for the last 5 years, Gretchen and I have been working together the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so we finally decided after all the collaboration we'd been doing, where she'd see the kid and I'd see the couple or the family, that maybe we needed to go into business together. And thus Confident Kids and Couples Counseling was born.
Yes. And we're really excited about it, because we've really found that when I'm seeing the kids and Sonia's seeing the parents or the whole family unit, that there's really a synergistic effect that starts to happen. And we really get some nice results. And I think the families feel very supported, and it's really great. And then in addition to the two of us working together, we've brought on some additional practitioners that have some specialties in substance use and eating and early childhood and trauma. So we really feel like whatever is coming up within a family system, our practice is really going to be able to support those families. And
right,
we're excited about
right.
It.
We have an additional couples and family therapist as well as me in our group as well. Mm-hmm.
Where are you located?
We are located in the Ridgedale Office Center in Minnetonka, which is not very far from the Ridgedale Target, actually, right on the service road off of 394 and 494.
Okay. Now, and so you treat people from throughout the Twin Cities, anybody that wants to come see you?
Yep. I have had people call me from as far away as Hutchinson or Shakopee, St. Paul.
St. Paul.
I mean, people mm-hmm. will come in order to get more specialty care, and we welcome everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. Well, that sounds fantastic. Now, I always like to tell people, and especially when it's the first introduction, like how's the best way to, so what's the best way if someone's interested in reaching you, how can they reach you?
Well, they have a couple options. They can always call, and we're happy to spend time talking with them over the phone. In fact, we do that pretty routinely, each of us, to be able to answer questions. Sometimes people aren't really sure if this is, you know, what's happening is they really need, do they really need to come in and see somebody? Do they not? And so we're happy to have a conversation with them about what's happening and even give them some strategies over the phone and to kind of hold them until their first appointment. And so we're happy to do that. And then on our website, they also have the option of emailing us that they can fill out in you know, one of those email forms.
Okay, so you do have like direct information intake form of some sort.
Yeah, we do. And our website is wholefamilytherapymn.com.
Okay. Now, we'll anytime that you hear us refer to a link or something on the show, you know you can always go to the website, go to mytalk1071.com, put in keyword mom, and we will make sure that you can get a direct link to any and all of the resources that are going to be provided for you during a broadcast. And we will always take your questions. It's a great time to call in with your questions when you have experts in the studio who are covering a variety of topics, and a topic in particular that you're curious about. It's a great time to call and get your questions answered. So the number here is 651-641-1071. Again, that number is 651-641-1071. Now, today's topic, I think I'm a mom of small children, well, almost small children now. I have an actual honest to goodness teenager in my house. But this is definitely a topic that's been coming up and we've been very thoughtful about sort of in recent weeks leading up to school. We're going to talk a little bit about anxiety in children today. Let's talk a little bit about the landscape of what we're going to discuss today.
Okay. Well, so we want to talk a little bit about the fact that anxiety is actually a very normal part of child development, and most kids are going to experience some form of anxiety at some point in their development or even at multiple points in their development. And then that's really a normal part of it. But it really impacts, normal or not, it certainly impacts the family system. And so we want to talk a little bit about the ways in which it can impact the family system and, you know, how to parent through all of that, whether it's, you know, just a routine part of child development or whether it's something more. There are parenting strategies that can be helpful and supportive to your child, and we want to make sure people know about what those are.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a mom also. I've got two kids, one in elementary school and one in intermediate school. So I think it's really important to be able to talk about the parenting stuff, even if the anxiety's not at the level that needs to see a professional, because anxiety can make you crazy when your kid isn't doing well.
Completely. Because it pushes your buttons. Kids are acting distressed, and so they pull emotions from us that we then have to respond to. And they're not always super great timing when they are feeling anxious and needing our help and support.
Because it's usually when you need to go to work.
Yeah.
Or when everybody needs to go to bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Now, I think that's a great place to actually begin sort of the start of this conversation. Let's kind of define that out. What's the difference between anxiety or, you know, that's at a level where you need to really maybe address it a specific way, or sort of just general everyday stress?
Well, I would say that in some ways it doesn't matter which level it is, because your response is not going to be that different. In my mind, always as a parent, when you can respond to your child in an empathic sort of a way, then you're allowing them to be able to draw strength from you as a parent and to be able to learn how to manage that emotion, whether it's a small one or whether it's a big one. They have to learn how to manage them. So to answer your question, I think always kind of leading with empathy and being able to listen and validate. And I know, Sonia, this comes up a lot for you,
right?
When you see parents, couples and families, you hear a lot about how parents
absolutely
feel.
Yeah. And actually, you know, one of the things that was such an important thing for me to hear, even as a parent, that I wanted to share with the parents out there. I had a teenage anxious client once who said this to me, knowing that I had kids. And she said, if your child is actually telling you that they're afraid, the chances are that they are way, way more afraid than they're letting you know. And so I think as parents, we just really need to tune in on what are the signals, because sometimes kids are giving you signals of anxiety that don't look like anxiety. It looks like irritability or defiance.
Defiance, yes. Yes, because they will, if there's a situation that causes them anxiety, you know, that anxiety, what that is, it's our bodies kicking into their fight, flight, or freeze response. And some kids are fighters. And so they will work really hard to not go into that situation that is causing them fear and worry and anxiety.
Absolutely. Now, I think we're going to have definitely a lot of ground we're going to be able to cover today. And I think if you're a mom out there, or you're a parent and you're listening, you have already heard or clued in or tuned into some part of that feeling and just this little bit of discussion that we've had about anxiety in our kids. We want you to stay tuned. You can give a call to the station if you have questions. We'd love to take them today, 651-641-1071. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about areas where anxiety show up and start talking a little bit about sort of the landscape of how you can help your child. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. Welcome back. You are listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and I am here in the studio today with Dr. Gretchen and Dr. Sonia from Confident Kids and Couples Counseling. And today we're talking about something that I think is really important for any of us parents out there listening, especially with school starting back up. We're talking about anxiety in children. Now, before the break, we talked a little bit about sort of the initial landscape of how to start thinking about anxiety. Dr. Sonia, you made a really great point about if your child comes to you and tells you that they're afraid, that they're probably much more afraid than they're actually admitting to you, that that's really just a sort of a first step for them to let you know a little bit of what's going on with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not uncommon for us as parents to just sort of gloss over our kids. Like, we don't always recognize how deeply they're feeling their fear. And the weirder the fear seems to the kid, the less likely they're going to bring it to us. And so we have to just sort of set a norm, I think, as parents, of having a lot of open discussion, come talk to me about whatever. And really super important not to invalidate a fear, especially if it sounds weird, because then the chances of them coming back and mentioning something are going to go right down to nothing.
Now, you actually said, when you said that, I think that's actually really, I'm having a bit of an aha moment on that one, because you do think about, there are certain things you'll invest in. You'll say, okay, if they're afraid about school, you want to focus on that. If they're afraid about, you know, going someplace by themselves, we tend to put a lot more emphasis on the things that I think maybe deep down we're afraid of for them.
Right.
But we don't necessarily put that same effort behind something that we may think of as less important or innocuous. Like my son is a good example. He told me the other day that he was afraid of losing at this game that he always wins at with his friends that he plays at.
Like, right.
And I said, and I was like, well, why? I mean, everybody's got to lose sometime. And he said, and I'm quoting him. He said, oh, I have an image to uphold here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And which hadn't ever occurred to me that there's this hierarchy when they're playing this game and that he's established himself and he's worried about sort of losing face with peer group. He's worried about what it means if he can't continue to maintain sort of a dominance at this particular thing, that he gets some sort of self-value from it. And I happened to catch myself on a good day. I must have been well rested because I didn't immediately laugh at it and go, you know, we actually had to talk about what that means, you know?
Right.
So, but that's, I think that's one of those things we don't think about that. We really just focus on the things that we're worried about and we put the energy behind those things.
Mm-hmm. And I think you make a really good point. I think as kids get older, that's a bigger deal for the adolescents, is their peer group and how they're feeling anxious around status and fitting in and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And in fact, that's where I think anxiety doesn't always look like anxiety, because kids will be asking for certain things and you'll say no, and you'll have this huge reaction to that. And it seems like they're maybe feeling entitled or having a hard time with that. But sometimes what it really is a deep worry about what if I don't fit in? If I don't have X, Y, and Z, then people are going to look at me, they're going to make fun of me, and they have all this worry about the implications socially for them and how they're going to manage that.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be little things. Like, we just had tears because my daughter and her best friend are not going to be in the same class. And I think there's some anxiety behind there, maybe, even though she's not saying anything, because who is going to be in her class? And we blow that off as like, well, of course you're going to know people in your class. It's a small school or whatever, and you're going to be fine. But that doesn't address the fact that they're actually really worried about it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I love what you did with your son and asked why, because I think the why is what you need to talk about, because the why is so important. I think sometimes we spend a lot of time debating about the how we're going to solve this problem. And really, sometimes we don't even understand what the problem is because we don't get down to it. We don't get down to what is it about losing that is bothering you? What is it about having this brand that is such an important thing to you? What is it about not having your friend in your classroom that is causing such distress?
I think you just hit on like the bottom line for almost every issue, whether it's with, you know, the couple as parents or parent and child or the child, you know, by themselves. And that is the meaning. Mm-hmm. Like getting to the bottom line meaning of whatever the issue is where you're going to find the solution.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because when we talk about anxiety, I think by and large, from a surface perspective, we think anxiety is bad, that what comes with it is just bad and nobody should have it and everybody should just be happy, happy, happy all the time. But there's actually a purpose for those feelings. Like, let's talk a little bit about the idea that the fear and the worry that are associated have actual purpose.
They do. They really do. And so that's because when I see kids in my office that are dealing with a lot of anxiety, that's actually one of the questions I'll ask them. I'll say, I got a trick question for you. You know, do you think anxiety is bad? And you know, some, a lot will say, oh yeah, it's terrible. It's horrible. Some are clever and they're on to me because they cue in to the fact that I just said it was a trick question and they go, no, it's not bad. So it's not bad. I mean, the reality is that we have to have that emotion because it's what helps us prepare for what's coming up. You know, if you know, I'll give examples. If you have a spelling test and there's hard words on there and you don't feel any worry, is that going to be a problem? Well, yeah, that's going to be a problem because you won't prepare because who cares? It's right. There's nothing to worry about. Or if I were going on a walk in the woods and a bear came lumbering out, and bears are pretty cute. You know, I think they're cute. They're cuddly. And right. Is that going to be a problem if I don't feel any fear? Well, yeah, that's going to be a really big problem. You know, so I give examples like that to show that this is our natural response. It's a protective response, and it's designed to really be helpful to us. And I think that helps them sort of feel like, okay, this is normal. This is a good thing. And so then we start to talk about, sometimes it just gets too big. It gets in the way. And so our job isn't to get rid of it. Our job is just to help you figure out how to contain it a little bit so that it stays helpful and doesn't get in your way.
Right. Research actually will talk about there's a sweet spot of anxiety where too little anxiety and you're not going to perform very well. And this is probably more often seen on sports teams and things like that. They're not feeling anxious enough to give their peak performance. And then there's a point where it gets to be too much and it starts to inhibit.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about that in terms of if you're looking at anxiety and you're recognizing that there is a purpose to it. How, as a parent or as a caregiver, does your response impact how a child moves through that?
Well, again, it kind of depends. So if they're in the part where they're not anxious enough, that they're not really preparing, I think as a parent, you're going to do very different things than if they've crossed over the optimal level of anxiety and now it's starting to get in their way.
Well, let's hit both of those, because I've lived the example of not nearly enough anxiety. You know, when you have that kid that's just kind of like too far ahead of the curve, so they don't ever think they have to do anything but show up.
Right.
That can be challenging.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So my usual response is, are you kidding me? So that's probably not the best way to do it.
I've done that one myself. Yeah. So, you know, just so you know that even as parents and psychologists, we do that too.
Absolutely. We're human first.
Exactly. And if you ask my kids, they'd be like, oh yeah, mom totally does that. So, you know, I don't know, Gretchen, if you want to hit that one. I think I'm more in line when it's the not prepared enough to do exactly what Twyla just said, which is, okay, let's get in line here and start working.
Right.
But that's probably not the optimal thing to tell a kid.
You know, yeah. I mean, if we're talking about not having enough anxiety, not having enough, I think the way that I kind of think about things is that if the motivation isn't coming from within, then or whatever it is that we need in order to perform isn't coming from within, then we have to start setting up things in our external world to help that happen. So depending on the child, depending on the situation, you know, it could be thinking about what are some other things that we could do then to start to generate some motivation. Mm-hmm. If concern about the outcome isn't doing it, then we have to come up with something else that's going to be important enough to the child to motivate them to get it going. And then sometimes that generates momentum so that they're starts off being external becomes more internal, and they start to feel some satisfaction from achieving and doing well and doing the things that all of their preparation allows them to do that feels good to them. And that good feeling then can become an internal motivator to continue on in that process. So, you know, if it's on that side, if it's on the too much anxiety side, that's a very different situation. I think for a lot of kids, worry will make them think really catastrophic things are going to happen if it doesn't go just so. And so then doing some fact checking can be very helpful and really walking them through. And then also thinking about, well, if the purpose of worry is to prepare, then let's prepare. So then, you know, what are you thinking is going to happen, first of all?
Right.
And then how likely is that to happen? And if it's somewhat likely that could happen, well, then let's make a plan. Let's prepare for that.
Right.
Now, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about specifically what happens when your child is going through and dealing with different levels of anxiety. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the ways that we respond. We're going to talk about maybe some of the ripple effects that anxiety can have on a family as well. And we will take your questions, 651-641-1071. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. Welcome back. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang. I'm in the studio today with Dr. Sonia and Dr. Gretchen from Confident Kids and Couples Counseling. Thank you, ladies, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we've been talking about anxiety in kids, and I think we've already learned and already kind of reinforced that there's some really great thought process that we should sort of be engaging in on a day-to-day basis when we're dealing with this in particular. I think sometimes we underestimate just how much our kids go through, and we want to make sure that we're doing the best that we can to support them. If you have questions, and trust me, this is a great time to call, because if you have questions, there are two experts in the studio. There are two doctors here in the studio that can answer your questions. The number here is 651-641-1071. Again, that number is 651-641-1071. Now, before the break, we talked a little bit about when you see in a child maybe not enough anxiety to motivate behavior. And we've talked a little bit about when you have too much anxiety that inhibits behavior. Let's talk a little bit about sort of what that ripple effect has on a family. When you have a child that is really struggling with their anxiety, what does that do to the family as a unit?
I think what I see the most common ripple effect is that it can create conflict in the parents. So it's really common for one parent to have a more soft touch approach and the other parent to maybe be a bit tougher. And so the parents can be in conflict about the best way to handle something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I'm probably doing parenting coaching with parents so that they can get on the same page, because let's face it, we've got two different people from two different backgrounds, sometimes two very different belief systems about how to parent, mm-hmm. and they're in conflict. And so if you're not on the same page, you're probably not going to solve the problem very well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if you ever see this, but I see this pattern emerge too sometimes, where you have those two different kinds of approaches, and then they are in conflict, and then they try and compensate for the other. So
totally.
they maybe start off kind of close to the middle, just kind of straddling either side of the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they get into my office, they have worked their way to polar opposites, because each one is trying to compensate for the other. The more soft one parent is, the more strict and firm the other parent is. And the more strict and firm the other parent is, the more soft and you know, warm and fuzzy soft parent is, and they are just like totally at extremes.
Exactly. Yes. I see that too, where, you know, well, you're too mean, and so I need to be much more nurturing. Well, you're too soft, mm-hmm. so I've got to set the boundaries because somebody's got to do it.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and that can actually shift even within your household, like on a day-to-day basis. Like that can shift depending on which child you're dealing with.
Yeah.
That can shift based on like what particular day of the week. Like I handle things better at the beginning of the week. My husband handles things better at the end of the week. Yeah. So if you're, you know, it kind of, it's almost like wherever your sweet spot is, you're trying to deal with it the way you deal with it. And it does make it really difficult when the other person is just coming in to help and you guys haven't really put a good plan together in place.
Yes.
So then they think they're sweeping in to help make it easier on you, and it's actually creating more tension, more anxiety, more conflict.
Exactly. Right. Because, you know, sometimes it makes it worse. Like if one comes in and they're going to be tough, but the other person is feeling very stressed about that toughness, and it's actually creating a big conflict. Like it happens where instead of focusing on whatever is going on with the kids, like the parents are now arguing in front of the kids about the right thing to do. Like that absolutely happens.
Yeah, that really doesn't help your kids' anxiety at all.
No. It's going to increase it.
Exactly. Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we see these ripple effects. Let's talk about some of the ways that the parents can respond if their children are going through this. What are some of the helpful things that a parent can do to help a child with anxiety?
Mm-hmm. I would say the very first thing that's important is to believe them. And again, going back to the client that told me, you know, they're probably feeling way more anxious than they're letting you know. It's really important to hear them and believe them and just take a breath and find out more. And, you know, if we think about the way our brain is structured, that anxious response is coming from what we call the reptilian brain, that more reactive space that's not really tuned into logical thought. And as parents, we have to be the ones to be working from the part of the brain, the front part of the brain, that's more logical and figure out the pathway for the kid to get there. And so I think probably, you know, do you need a hug or something like that is probably the very first response that can be helpful just to calm them down, especially if they're in acute anxiety.
Yeah.
I even like that you asked that you ask them to do that, because I've probably gotten caught at least more than once with the teenager and the almost teenager in my house thinking, oh, you can use a hug. I'm just going to give you one. They don't always want one.
We had that happen yesterday.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that that it has nothing to do with you. That very much has to do with where they are, what they're going through. And sometimes they need it. Like sometimes I get unsolicited just crawling my lap like a puppy dog wanting to cuddle me. And sometimes it's just, oh, if you put a hand on me right now, there's going to be an issue. So
and
you
never
have to
in
that.
Public with that teenager, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I've learned that lesson. I have learned, although I will admit that I did strike a not so nice sort of deal with the devil. I said, I won't embarrass you at school. I won't do all of the things that other folks do that drive you crazy, but I always reserve the right to get kissed and hugged before you leave for school. And if I don't get that, then I'm going to pretty much lick your face like a lap dog. So we learned after the first day, it's easier to just give mom the hug. Just let it go. Now we actually have some callers on the line. We have Mary on the line. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling the Mom Show. How can we help today?
Hi. My 16-year-old granddaughter had her physical last week before she started school, and she told her doctor that she was feeling anxious and depressed. And the doctor gave her a prescription for Zoloft. And I'm wondering how the doctors feel about giving that kind of drug to a child without a mental health evaluation.
Well, I don't know, you know, kind of what the background is. Generally, I don't tend to lead with medication. Depending on the situation. I mean, there are certain circumstances where I would probably make the recommendation to talk to a prescribing doctor about medication. One situation would be if there's such extreme emotion going on that it's severely interfering with day-to-day life and it's urgent that it get under control. That's certainly a situation in which I would recommend that be part of the treatment plan. Mm-hmm. Or at least have a conversation about that. I think also, I tend to, I mean, probably because I'm a therapist, that I think that starting with therapy is always a good bet, because at least it gives a chance to really assess further where the anxiety is coming from and what's really going on. Mm-hmm. And there may be situations in which it really does make a lot of sense to add medication as part of that treatment, but there may be other situations in which really what's needed is some support and some teaching of some coping and that sort of thing that therapy can be helpful in getting.
Well, are there any dangers to giving? Like, I've heard that it can cause suicidal thoughts in teenagers, drugs like that.
There can be that side effect. Yes, there can be that side effect. Okay. And what I would encourage people to do is really have an in-depth conversation with the prescribing doctor. So if it's a pediatrician, just ask those questions. Anytime, actually, we're talking about medication, I encourage parents to really think about it from four different perspectives. So not only the potential risks and benefits of taking the medication, but also the potential risk and benefits of not taking the medication, because there certainly are circumstances in which medication is probably indicated. And you need to think about, are there risks if we choose not to medicate when it is indicated? What are those risks? Mm-hmm. And so to really be talking with the prescriber, I'm guessing as a pediatrician in this instance, about all around risks and benefits with taking and not taking the medication and starting with medication would really, mm-hmm. I think, be helpful.
I just wanted to tag team on Gretchen and say that kind of my general rule of thumb is if a kid is doing badly enough to need medication, they're definitely doing badly enough that they should be in a therapist's office.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for the question, Mary, and hopefully the information helps you out.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Brooke on the line.
Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke. Thanks for calling the Mom Show. How can we help today?
Hi. I would like some tips or tricks to deal with the perpetual whininess of a toddler, just where everything that comes out of their mouth is not a question, it's not a demand, it's just a whining. And just how to get through that without, you know, sitting down and crying hysterically.
You're crying hysterically. Okay. Crying hysterically.
We're both just sitting there sobbing. So, no.
Yeah. So what are some of the situations that you're seeing the whining happening?
Anytime we ask for something. And you know, my first response is, okay, take a breath. Now, what do you want? And how do you ask nicely? And that works, but we're not learning new behavior. We still, every time we ask, we always start with a whine. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, how do I get it not to be whiny the first time we ask the question?
How old is your child?
He'll be 3.
He'll be 3, yep. So it's every time he's asking for something?
Yes.
Every time he's asking for something. Is there ever a time that he asks for something without whining?
At this moment, not in my memory. I'm sure there is, but at this point, it's just, I can't, no, not really. I mean, it's always, I guess every once in a while, like if it's like the third or fourth or fifth time we've corrected it, then he'll ask nicely, but it's not often enough.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's that whine, and it is really designed to get our attention and to call us to make it stop. That's by design. But so I guess a couple things would be anytime that he is asking appropriately, you really want to reinforce that and kind of describe what you're seeing. I really like how you use that tone of voice. That was a nice tone of voice, and just be, you know, giving physical touches, kind of just any way that you can reinforce that heavily and minimize your reaction to the whininess will start to, but it's a process. So, but that will start to kind of help work its way out.
So suck it up and tough it out.
Well, maybe not quite like that. Yeah. Hold on. We're going to have to take a quick break. Brooke, I'm going to have you hold the line. So when we come back, we'll finish answering your question. We're going to deal with a little bit of helping with toddlers and whining. And we're also going to take any other calls we have. Don't forget the number 651-641-1071. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Mom Show. Well, Welcome back. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and I'm in the studio with Dr. Sonia and Dr. Gretchen from Confident Kids and Couples Counseling. Now, before the break, we had Brooke on the line. Thank you so much for holding, Brooke. We appreciate it. And Brooke had a problem. She has a toddler, and the classic toddler dilemma. The toddler likes to whine as opposed to ask for things. And Brooke was looking for a little bit of support and how to maybe redirect that behavior and stop that particular behavior.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Yes. So, before the break, I had mentioned really looking for those positive behaviors. So those times that he is asking more appropriately, to really reinforce those. But the other thing that you can do is to create perhaps within a play situation some scenarios that might pull more of that positive behavior that you're wanting. So like, for example, if you're coloring or playing with Legos, or, you know, doing something like that where you're on the floor with him and playing, and that might be a circumstance in which you can pull some more positive behavior from him. And that's
if he has my undivided attention, we mm-hmm. don't whine.
Yeah.
But it's any time that he does not have my undivided attention, we have the whining.
You have the whining. Yep.
Yeah. If my world is revolving around him, we're great.
Yeah.
That's toddlers.
That is toddlers. Absolutely.
True.
So then the other thing I would say to you is that the more specific your praise is when you're praising, the more powerful it will be. So when he has your undivided attention and he's giving you all that really appropriate behavior, be very specific in what it is that you're praising, about how the words he's using, about the tone he's using, about the way in which he's asking and how proud you are of him, and really make that make an impact. Because that increases, and I think a lot of parenting is about playing the probability, is increases the probability that you're going to get a better response when he doesn't have your full attention. And then anything that even is close to a more appropriate request when he doesn't have your full attention, you still want to reinforce that, because it's moving in the direction that you want it to go, and you want to acknowledge that he's doing that and give a lot of attention to that. And that this is something I'd be happy to talk with you more about. It's hard, you know, in the context of a radio show to talk a lot about it, but I would be happy to talk with you more off the air. If you want to leave your contact information, we can talk more.
Yeah, absolutely. So Brooke, hold the line, because we're going to make sure we get a contact information. We want to get you connected to Dr. Gretchen, and hopefully what she's told you today will help. So thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. I think that's a perfect example of what you see when you see things across the board. When you see anxiety, she actually said something that clued right in for me, in that when he doesn't have her attention, he doesn't mm-hmm. know how to get it back.
Right.
So he's using something that he knows, but there's something underlying. There's an underlying reason why he wants her attention that way. And we've all had toddlers, so we all can, you know, mm-hmm. we all understand that. But sometimes there's a real reason why they, you know, that's important to them. And they don't really have the words to explain that, you know, I feel this, or I'm experiencing this, or I'm going through this. They just, they're all emotions. They're all just one big nerve.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes it's just sort of the psychological experience of separation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be the physical separation from parents can trigger anxiety responses, but even the psychological sense that mom or dad's not really there can make a kid feel uncertain and have some anxious responses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's why it's so important to make sure that people, that you understand sort of how as a parent you can respond to that.
Yes.
And sort of what kind of things you can put in place to respond to that. Now, we had talked a little bit within our discussion about anxiety in kids, about some of the ways that we can kind of respond to it. And we have just a couple minutes left, but I wanted to make sure, particularly because we're all about to head into sort of our, what we like to call our most wonderful time of the year. And for a lot of kids, not necessarily the most wonderful time of the year, school is starting.
Exactly.
And that kind of brings in a whole other, you know, spectrum of things that they had sort of worries they had maybe let go of, things they hadn't anticipated before, maybe big changes are underfoot, whether you're going into a new school, a new program, a new grade, that can kind of create a whole sort of a bubble of anxiety for kids.
Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, actually, sometimes the things we don't think about are also creating anxiety for the kids. We had a situation a couple years ago at the school where my kids go, where the front part of the first week of school was heavy loaded with drills, fire drill, tornado drill, mm-hmm. lockdown drill. And especially for the kindergartners, that freaked them out because they didn't know how to do school yet. And so, you know, we have to be able to prepare them. And the more prepared a kid feels, the more mastery a kid feels about something that's coming up, the better they're going to respond to the anxious situation. So giving them information, talking about what they can do in a certain circumstance that causes mm-hmm. them to feel anxiety, what they can expect to have happen. I think all of those mm-hmm. things, anything that can create that sense of mastery at school is going to help them a lot.
Yes, definitely. As well as, you know, if you do have a child who is expressing a lot of anxiety and maybe has a history of separation anxiety, the other thing that you can really do is talk to the child's teacher and, you know, kind of talk about how to do drop off and kind of have a plan in place proactively would be really helpful. And then also, if you can, if the child can get into the school and meet the teacher, which often you can, but if it's a child that really is having separation anxiety, the more, if you can do that a couple of times, even that helps them feel more prepared and that helps reduce their anxiety.
Can we talk a little bit about how we approach that for, say, like your middle school and your high school age kids who may be going through something, but sort of are desperately wanting to not have it be a thing for people around them? Like, they don't want other people to know that they're going through something. They don't want other people to know that it's difficult. But as their parent, you still have to try to help them manage what's going to happen when they go into, say, a new classroom or a new grade level or a new school setting.
Yeah. And I would say, like, middle school especially, I think, is a place where that gets triggered because we see a lot of, like, self-esteem takes a hit in middle school. I mean, remember middle mm-hmm. school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Really not a whole lot of fun. And so that's an area I think that is just anxiety provoking in general. But I think that's getting back to that meaning and really understanding what your specific child's experience is going to help guide the thing that you do. And you have to kind of get into what are they telling themselves? You know, we psychologists call that self-talk, but everybody has it. It's what your thought process mm-hmm. is, what you're telling mm-hmm. yourself inside of your own head about what's going to happen. And like, what if is the biggest mm-hmm. trigger. That's the biggest phrase that tends to lead into anxiety. So if you can find out what your kids' what ifs are, mm-hmm. you're going to have a better way of approaching that and helping them out.
Now, is there, we have probably about a good minute and a half left. What is a good sort of just, is there one good like physical activity that we can encourage in our kids that will help these, that help anxiety?
Physical activity?
Yeah, whether that's like eating better, getting more exercise, getting to bed on time. Is there something that actually, is there any one like thing that can actually help reinforce that?
All of the above.
Absolutely.
Well, sleep is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Sleep is a very, very big deal. And I think a lot of us actually are operating in a sleep deprived mode. And that reduces your capacity to cope as a parent, as a teen, as a, you know, junior high student. It's a big deal. So taking care of your sleep is very important.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, thank you so much, Dr. Gretchen and Dr. Sonia, for coming in today. I feel like we all learned a lot, and there's definitely more we'll be able to learn as you come in the weeks to come. Don't forget, you can go to mytalk1071.com to get resources on how to connect with confident kids and couples counseling, and also to get on-demand access to this podcast. You can go to mytalk1071.com, put in keyword mom, and you'll have access to the links and the on-demand listening. Thanks so much for listening. This was The Mom Show here on My Talk 1071. 7-1.